if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings, welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. This is our 2023 PGA Championship in-depth research pod. It's episode 258. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this year's second major championship. Hello, gents.
Afternoon, boys.
Afternoon, boys.
Please subscribe to this podcast as you drive the popularity of the show. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world famous golf betting system website where we will have my in-depth betting preview available Monday the 15th of May. Paul will be chipping in with alternative markets and first round leader tips later in the week. We have our unique major championship form statistics. I want to go into a little bit more of that later on. We've got PGA Championship form stats combined with current form stats, plus our brand new spanking predictor model. Our PGA Championship Optimizer will be available on Monday morning UK time. All of it, of course, free of charge. There is no paywall at Golf Betting System. Available on Twitter. If you want to follow Barry, he's at a good talk golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I'm at Bamford Golf. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where this podcast is available along with my weekly golf betting show. If you're listening to this on the YouTube channel, press that like button. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. I'll do you a deal. Best review that comes in between now and Tuesday, I will read it at the start of our PGA Championship show, which will be the next episode. Now, this one came in via email again. I listen on Podbean, and there is no 5-star review option. If there was, however, I would say, and then we get the 5-star review. Unequivocally, the best golf betting podcast out there. Tuesday mornings are actually worth looking forward to, knowing that a fresh episode from Steve, Paul and Barry awaits. Even my kids know that Tuesday is the day we listen to the guys with the funny voices talk about golf in the car instead of the radio. The tips are well researched and well reasoned. The lads win and lose with humility and humour. The subtle bias towards the UK and Irish players on tour always makes me laugh. Keep up the great work. That is from Patrick in Canada. We love it. Thanks, Patrick.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. Thanks, Patch. Do you really think we've got this bias towards UK and Irish players? I know we've all backed Seamus Power this week, which we won't particularly mention where he is on the leaderboard after a day. I don't know. Do you think we go down that route, Barry?
I think my wallet would indicate that I do for sure. Yeah.
Were any of us on Justin Rose when he won at Pebble Beach this week?
No,
this year?
No.
Were any of us on Matt Wallace when he won?
No.
But you were on Matt Fitzpatrick, weren't you, at the RBC you got?
Fitz, yeah.
There you go.
I think the sample size is a little bit bigger than that, and I would say it's probably quite true.
There may be a little truth in there, but...
You won't see the weather forecast for the PGA Championship. We might be on a few more. Yeah. I've got exciting news, chaps. Do you want to hear it?
Go on.
After 6 years and over 250 episodes as an independent pod, Golf Betting System podcast has been nominated for Favourite Betting Podcast in the Smart Betting Club Awards. Naturally, we are overjoyed and humbled to have been nominated, and we sit amongst a plethora of big budget media and operator-produced podcasts, which I have to say myself, for three lads that do this on a very tight budget, I think we should say well done to ourselves. So, yeah. Of course, we have a humble request for you, the Golf Betting System podcast listeners. To support the pod, please take the time to vote for us. I have placed a link near the top of this podcast description, or simply search 2023 Smart Betting Club Awards. The online questionnaire takes 3 minutes to fill in, and we'd appreciate each and every one of you who cast a vote for the Golf Betting System podcast. Don't delay! Please vote for us today! Exclamation mark. There you go. What do you think, boys?
Brilliant stuff. Oh, it's lovely to get some external recognition, whether that was nominated by some listeners as part of the kind of preliminary process to get down to a shortlist. I'm not quite sure, but whichever way, it's great to be included with it. So yes, please vote.
Don't delay. Please vote for us today. I actually came up with that about 10 minutes ago before we started recording the podcast. I was very pleased with it.
You're wasting at this.
I think I could work in one of these swanky London advertising agencies with creative juice like that.
Back in the 1950s when that was first coined as a phrase.
Yeah, fair comment. Right, let's get down to business, shall we? We're recording this podcast at noon on Friday prior to the PGA Championship week. I'm saying that because right now there is only one live market to bet with, and that is Boyle Sports, who are first to go live with their main PGA Championship main outright market, which is eight places each way at 150 odds the place. They will also have their Pick Your Place facility available where you can choose between six, 10 or 12 places each way at 50 odds for Oak Hill. Even better, for those of you who don't have access to a Boyle Sports account, Golf Betting System podcast listeners in England, Scotland and Wales can take advantage of their £25 in free bets bundle offer for those of you 18 plus. Full details of this new customer promotion plus a link through to that very offer with T's and C's are available in the podcast description. Right, let's run through the current prices that our friends at Boyle Sports are offering in their live 2023 PGA Championship market. Right, okay. John Rahm, Scottie Scheffler, 15-2 joint favourites. Rory McIlroy, 11-1. We've then got three at 20-1. They are Patrick Cantlay, Brooks Koepka and defending champion Justin Thomas. 22-1 sees, Paul, you know who this is going to be. Who's at 22-1?
It's got to be
the X-Man.
The X-Man. That is his price, isn't it? 22-1.
Come
every single
come time. Rain, come shine, come hail. Xander Schauffele, 22-1 for a major. We then got Cam Young at 25-1. Tony Finau at 28-1, along with Victor Hovland. 30-1, Matt Fitzpatrick and Colin Morikawa with Jordan Spieth. I was surprised to see Colin Morikawa at 30-1, to be honest. In anti-post markets, if you look, he's 20-1 pretty much everywhere. So he's been jumped to 30-1 with Boyles in their live market. We've then got Sung Jae Im at 33s along with Cam Smith, and then 40-1 shots, and there's lots of them. Sam Burns, Jason Day, Max Homer, Dustin Johnson, Shane Lowry, Hideki Matsuyama, 50-1 bar. That's where we are. That's the first live market for the 2023 PGA Championship.
A bit slow this time round, aren't they? We normally seen two or three by this point on a Friday, but perhaps they'll pop up over the rest of Friday and over the weekend as well.
Potentially. Talor Gooch. Is it Talor or Taylor? You tell me it's Taylor. I'll still call it Talor anyway. Is it Taylor Gooch or Talor Gooch?
I think you can call him what you like, Steve. Your pronunciation probably doesn't matter massively. I think we know.
Yeah, he's a 50-1 chance with Tyrrell Gooch. Hatton, Tom Kim, and Sahith Tigala. Any names ringing any bells there with you, Barry, in terms of players that you might be interested in backing?
I put one bet on earlier this week. I was watching, flicking around the channels, caught the highlights of last week's event and saw a couple of shots of Hatton. And just with the digestion I've been doing on the course, it feels like you kind of need everything singing in your game. It doesn't feel to me like any one particular skill is going to like separate, help you separate from the field. He's just been playing some really good golf. A little bit further digging in on that, he's eighth in the data golf rankings. And I said, right, well, let's go investigate a bit further. And he's 66-1, which just, to me, that's a big mismatch. So I put an anti-post on at 66-1. But other than that, I'm still percolating on other options and other golfers. It's going to take a few days, the weekend, to kind of settle and see where I land.
Mm. Yeah, I guess with Hatton playing this week, there is the potential that he produces three good rounds from where he is now. And
yes, I hope so.
Yeah, I know. He's one of your additions after, well, both yours and my teams got decimated this week with withdrawals before the start of the events. But yeah, we'll see how he gets on. But yeah, if he finishes well, then 66 will be a price that's long gone by Monday, I expect.
It does seem generous, doesn't it? 50-1 Hatton. 66-1 Tommy Fleetwood, Wacky Neiman, Patrick Reed, and Adam Scott.
Yep. Yeah, Scott's started well as well, hasn't he, this week?
Playing nice golf, isn't he?
Hmm.
Should we talk about the course?
Yes.
This year we are moving from Oklahoma, Tulsa, Southern Hills. We're going to the East Course at Oak Hill Country Club in Rochester, New York. My new friend Andy Lack, who is on the Inside Golf podcast, he lives a lot of his life in Manhattan, and he told me the other day off mic that it takes about 4 to 4.5 hours to drive from Manhattan to Rochester, New York, which is right on Lake Ontario, I believe. It isn't actually a million miles away from Toronto, the other side of the water. Now, I'm talking about the geography of this, not because I got A level, way, way back, but because I think the geography of this golf course is something that we need to bear in mind this week. The designer of the course is Donald Ross. It's a 1925 original. I've got to say, I love this golf course. The more I watch content about it and the more I learn about it, the more I like about it. It had an Andrew Green renovation in 2020. Course type, of course, classical parkland. I've classified it as technical in its scoring. I expect the standard PGA Championship that we've seen recently score of 8 to 10, 11 under par winning it. It's also long. And when I say long, it doesn't sound long at 7,394 yards, but it is a par 70, which features two par 5s, both of which are over 600 yards in length. Holes with water hazards 6. The water hazards tend to be a creek that run through the course. The fairways, we're talking, of course, northeastern golf here in the United States, so they are bent grass with poana. The rough, your typical northern United States, ryegrass, bluegrass, and tall fescue. I did see some rather juicy pictures of rough for the first time yesterday. Yeah. Come up on social media.
Yep. Yeah. Strange for a PGA Championship. That's normally ahead of the US Open.
But yeah, it wasn't Kevin Nahl.
No.
Oh, Kevin Nahl loves those little vids, doesn't he?
He does,
Just before he misses the cut.
He's missed a trick this week.
He has. The greens. Now, I think these greens are relatively small for the length of the golf course. 4,500 square feet. They feature pure bent grass. So as of now, on the PGA Tour in 2023, we've only seen two courses with bent grass. One of them, of course, Augusta National. The second one, the AT&T Byron Nelson, which is taking place this week. The Birdie Fest down in Dallas, Texas. I just got to say, it's a great course. It's hosted three US Opens, 56, 68 and 89. It's also hosted three PGAs, 80, 2003 and 2013. plus the 95 Ryder Cup. The 2023 PGA, though, will be the first time we've seen the new East Course, which has been facilitated by the renovation of Andrew Green. So, I don't think we're going to see the same kind of Jason Duffner-type plotter winner this year. Because going back to 13, this golf course was absolutely surrounded by trees. Very, very claustrophobic golf course that really did take away any power benefits of the top players like a Rory McIlroy. It was all about positioning. It was all about metronomic approach play. And Duffner absolutely dominated on that basis. I don't think we're going to see that this year. This golf course has been expanded. It's also been... the renovation basically has taken out, I've been told, over 600 to 700 trees. So it looks a lot more wide open off the tee.
Yep. Yeah, you can see that from the some of the flyovers that are out there, and I vaguely remember Duffner winning back a decade ago, and it just looks like a different course. It's much more exposed. Yes, there's still trees on the estate, but it's far more exposed than it was 10 years ago. And yeah, it would suggest that it's going to play entirely differently. They've effectively recarved a different course out of it, or the original Donald Ross kind of thought process, I guess, with the course design in the first instance. Should present a different challenge, I'd have thought.
If you say to me Donald Ross golf courses, and if you've got a notepad ready, listeners, and you want a list, this is all available in my PGA Championship preview article, which I'll put a link to in the description box with the podcast. Paul has also, or will put a link on the homepage, so that you can click through easily from the homepage of the website. If you want a list of Donald Ross courses, here they are. Aronimink, 2010, 2011 AT&T National. Also hosted the 2018 BMW Championship. Now, I know one of those first two was won by Justin Rose, who went on to win the US Open at Merion. I also know the 2018 BMW Championship was won by one Keegan Bradley, Barry. Your old mucker, or is he my old mucker? I tend to put him up far too often. He never does anything for me.
It's a miracle the guillotine hasn't fallen on him to put him on the post-it note of doom. He's like a cat.
How many lives has he got? See, if I put him up this week for the PGA and he lets me down yet again, maybe that's it.
Oh, you could forgive him at a major, though, couldn't you?
Detroit Golf Club, where they play the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Now, that might seem a complete red herring, but that was won 1 year by the buccaneering Bryson DeChambeau. And Bryson DeChambeau won the US Open recently, didn't he, at Winged Foot? And I can definitely see a little bit of Winged Foot in this golf course.
Yep.
No, Patrick Reed's also got a reasonable record at that Detroit Golf Club as well, at that Rocket Mortgage Classic. I wouldn't just look at those leaderboards and completely discount them. Of course, there's really two main golf courses that Donald Ross is famous for. One is Eastlake Country Club, where they play the Tour Championship every year. How you build that now into your analysis with this ridiculous scoring system they use, I don't know. Maybe just look at the 72-hole scores for players that really do get on well at Eastlake. The other one is Pinehurst Number 2, where they played the 2014 US Open. I don't see a lot of similarities between this golf course and Pinehurst Number 2, which is clearly Sandbelt down in the Carolinas. So don't see a lot in that one. They also played the 2011 and 2015 Barclays at Plainfield in New Jersey. And the other one that's a regular on the PGA Tour every single year, Siwoo Kim Country, Sedgefield Country Club Wyndham Championship. They are all Donald Ross courses. If someone asked me, Steve, with all of your knowledge of golf architecture and the PGA Tour and golf courses in the United States, what is the number one thing about a Donald Ross course that signifies it is Donald Ross? I would say green complexes that tier from back to front. And this golf course has got loads of them. Mm. The ubiquitous words from a golfer, and you will read them in interviews before the off this week, you have to play from under the hole. See a lot of that. I love the golf course. I think it's a cracker. I really do. There is lots of more detail around it. I mean, we're talking about two par fives that are over 600 yards. I think they'll go for the one on the front side, the one on the second side. There's a creek that runs through just about 300 yards off the tee. I think that's going to force a lot of them to go 3 wood off the tee and just play it 3 shots. You're going to have to be a brave boy when it's 9 degrees Celsius to be lashing it over 310 over that creek with a driver.
Yep.
So I've got a feeling that these par fives this week are going to be 3 shotters to pretty much all of the field, especially the second one. Maybe not the first. I think the first one's attackable for the long guys. But yeah, beautiful golf course. The greens here, they tend to be on... I'd describe them as rotund. They tend to be on upslopes. They tend to be above the fairway. They tend to be on their own kind of mounds. They are very rectangular and square in shape. And they are surrounded by some of the most devilish bunkering you will see. Because of that way that they're elevated. The bunkers here look pretty, pretty serious to get in. And a lot, you know, you're going to get a lot of tucked pins behind bunkers on this test. So again, if you can find players that are decent in terms of sand saves, I'm not sure that's going to be a bad look either. That's a double negative. So what I mean is, I think that will be a good look. A lot of the fairway bunkering as well is pretty penal. I mean, I've read and I've heard that a predominant amount of the fairway bunkers, you're in a situation where you could at least have a half shot penalty to a full shot penalty.
Yep.
The fairways themselves, Andy Lack told me, 27 to 28 yards wide on average. So not overly penal, but certainly not wide. I'm just trying to pull up a sheet that would give us some kind of comparison on that. Harbour Town, 22 yards wide at 300 yards carried, so wider than that. You're kind of looking, I don't know, TPC Sawgrass wide, they're about 30 wide. So Bay Hill's 33, but they're not overly wide, but the issue you're going to have here is clearly bunkering, and then you've got the thick, lush rough that they're going to put in play. And if you go super, super wide, there's lots of knee to mid-waist high, tall fescue. Could be another one of these scenarios, you know. I do get the feeling with this, chaps, that this could be a winged foot scenario where don't miss the fairway by a couple of yards, miss it by 20 and get in all the trampled down mess and you're in decent situation.
I get that. I can see the winged foot comparison quite clearly. You think back to how Bryson attacked that and Matthew Wolff, who was second that week, wasn't it? They were just super aggressive. And you can see how in a world where it's going to be difficult to hit fairways for a lot of the players, you know, they are tight and... Yes, it's likely to be relatively soft on the fairways, so balls are less likely to be running through into the rough. But if you're wide and you're playing out of the rough, then it's going to be far more beneficial to be 50 yards further up playing out of the rough than 50 yards further back playing out of the rough.
Yeah.
And in that respect, I guess there'll be a school of thought that says if you go out there and just aggressively attack every hole and take your chances. You hit fairways, fantastic. If you miss fairways, then you're going to be kind of gouging out with far more loft in your hands and giving yourself a chance of actually holding these greens as well. We'll see how it pans out, but yeah, I get the analogy with winged foot and the way that was attacked, and I wouldn't be surprised to see some of the similar names on the leaderboard, in and around the leaderboard this week as well. We shall see.
Other things that I noted, because of these raised green complexes, the amount of false fronts on these greens is just mega. So you can literally hit an approach shot, and the difference between a yard, half a yard, can be either a great approach shot or one that rolls 30 yards back onto the fairway. There's a lot of that going on. Also, a lot of the greens, it would appear, have got a scenario where there's some pretty thick, lush rough towards the rear of them, but in front of them and around them, and especially around around the run, there's lots of shaved runoff areas. Which again, we saw, I mean, that's becoming quite typical now, isn't it? We saw a lot of that at both Brookline last year and also at Southern Hills. You know, some of these runoff areas go 30, 40, 45 yards back.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
it's
yeah.
Quite a long pitch.
But, yeah, you got it. So, again, might be something to look into, say scrambling from over 30 yards, some kind of number like that.
Bit of Patrick Reed wizardry around the greens, or from off the greens at least.
Fitzpatrick, maybe?
I think you're going to need a lot of... It suggests to me it's a lot of all-round game. I think the emphasis... quite rightly, from the comments so far, from the media, from the social media, has been a focus towards driving, driving distance combined with driving accuracy, so strokes gained off the tee, total driving, those kind of stats. But it is heavily bunkered, and particularly around the greens. And you are going to be playing either from some thick rough around the greens, or as you said, kind of from these aprons and potentially 30, 40, 50 yard pitches in. So
yeah, tight lies, collection areas.
It kind of suggests that there's going to be different ways to get around this. You know, some players will be able to hit a lot of greens and compile a score that way in a kind of metronomic fashion, whereas others will be able to use their short game skills to be able to save par or on the two par fives, get themselves potentially in position to make birdie from off of the green.
You've looked a lot of this, Barry. What are your take? You know, we know that you love your golf course design. What are your takes on the East Course at Oak Hill from your research to date?
It's always hard to tell how. How something's going to play, but this one feels like it could play reasonably equitable, and that different styles or different types of players can compile a score, assuming the weather doesn't go crazy or the wind doesn't really kick up. But yeah, naturally, length is always going to be an advantage, but I think a mid-range hitter can still compete and challenge. Like, nobody's going to have a huge percentage of fairways hit this week because they're quite narrow. So, yeah, that length advantage you said, like going, coming out of the rough with a bit more loft will be very welcome for those guys who have that distance off the tee. It's a tough, it feels like it's harder to narrow down the field for a PGA, particularly this one, this year. I suppose it's right now, but kind of strong. Yeah, that's where I'm kind of just looking at, like, strong in all round, in all departments right now. Like, I don't want to see somebody who's struggling with their putter. know, because you're going to have to scramble a good bit this week, no matter, you know, I don't think you're going to get these like crazy high 80% greens in reg this week. If you do, it might be one or two. So yeah, scrambling and like that, yeah, mid-range scrambling distance, I think you guys have pointed out, could be quite applicable. Because if you do miss the fairways and you're kind of gouging a bit out of the rough, you might not be able to reach the green. You're going to leave yourself those funky distances.
Yeah. I don't think these green, one of the things that Andy and I discussed in his podcast this week, I don't think these greens are overly funky. They're definitely tiered front to back. They're nothing like Augusta National. If you can get the ball in the right quadrant with that approach shot, most of the putts are quite flat. Little breakers, especially if you can keep the ball under the hole. I don't think the putting surfaces themselves are too funky. I think this golf course really, to me, screams approach, it's approach distance control, isn't it? It really,
yeah, I think it shouts it.
But you are going to get yourselves in trouble, and that's the thing. When you get yourself in trouble and you hit one of these false fronts and the ball rolls 30 yards, can you get up and down? If you do catch a bunker, can you get that sand save? Can you keep the momentum going with that sand save to make par? It does feel like... It feels to me very like Bethpage Black, the PGA Championship that Koepka won. Mm-hmm. I think this course is very, very similar. The time of year is exactly the same. The geography is exactly the same.
Yeah, it's long as well, isn't it?
Yes. That was a 7,459 par 70 Bethpage.
Mm. Bethpage tends to play just a little bit tougher, and I wouldn't put the winning score quite as tough as that this week. So I think you're right in your kind of assertion there that players who can find, you know, the putting surface in regulation or, you know, the proximity is good enough to give themselves a chance will make birdies. It's just, will you make enough birdies to offset the bogeys that are made from when you do miss the fairway, when you find a bunker, as you say, you know, the fairway bunkers are proportion of a shot penalty in their own right, and if you're not getting up and down from around the greens as well, then there's bogeys to be found everywhere. But yeah, if you can offset that with sufficient birdies, then maybe the 8-10 under that kind of number isn't unattainable.
Here's one for you. 8 of the last 10 PGA championships have been won by a player whose driving distance all drives was within the top 20 when arriving at the golf course he won at. The two exceptions, Colin Morikawa, who we were on at Harding Park, which was, for me, not a standard PGA Championship setup.
No, it's far short.
The other one, Phil Mickelson, in that absolute wind blast fest at Kiawah. Which again, I think, is an exception rather than a rule. I still think that power off the tee is going to be a feature of the person that actually wins this week.
Mm. Yeah.
You can go back to Keegan Bradley at Atlanta Athletic in 2011. Even he ranked in the top 30 driving distance on arrival, all drives. And when I've just looked at the current metric, that takes you down to, I believe, top 30 would be one is Justin Thomas and the other one, who I found very interesting. And this might actually go back to our lead-in preview in terms of Patrick in Canada, who says, oh, you're subtle bias towards UK and Irish players. Matt Fitzpatrick's in that top 30 for driving distance all drives this season.
Yeah,
for me, the courses, Barry mentioned it as well, the courses I like that I think there's definite links to visually, correlating courses, definitely, Wingfoot. I also saw a bit of Brookline in this from last year, the US Open, and I think Bethpage Black. And this is another thing I think we need to get out there. And I think this is going to be absolutely critical. I'll read it for my preview. The key for punters, though, will be to dissect in detail the weather and what course conditions will be in play during May. Indeed, it's well worth mentioning Oak Hill's New York State location. With the banks of Lake Ontario within 6 miles, this is a very northerly location for a mid-May hosted PGA. Snow will have still been on the ground in mid-March, and with snow melt saturating the local water table, plus plenty of precipitation as temperatures increase in early spring, you cannot see the Earth at the East Course playing anything else but extremely long with limited or no run on the fairways. Now, I looked into that. March, 2.81 inches of rain here in Rochester. April, 4.07 inches. May, to date, 3/4 of an inch of rain. Have to say, the last 5 days hasn't been any rain, and there doesn't look like there's a lot of rain in the forecast building up to the actual start of the tournament. So I'm thinking, I don't know, let's see, it's pointless talking about the weather at this stage. But I don't think you're going to see bounding drives running 25, 35, 40 yards down the fairway. Not going to happen. Not going to happen. So yeah, I still think it plays ultimately to the longest in the field.
Yeah, particularly with the removal of the trees, it's made it more of a... It opens it up for the longer hitters to take a chance on a lot of these holes that they wouldn't ordinarily have had a chance to do in its 2013 guys anyway.
I'm just taking a glance. I'm using Wind Finder, as I always do, Rochester. That's the tower that we're using. And, yeah... 7 days away. Take it as it will. But you can help me here, Paul. The warmest temperature I am seeing for the Thursday is 15 degrees Celsius. What is that in Fahrenheit?
59, so yeah, not warm.
In the morning, it's stating 8 a.m., 6 degrees Celsius.
Yeah, so the snoods will be out, won't they?
Okay, we move to Friday. The warmest of the 4 days, apparently, 23 degrees Celsius mid-afternoon. What is that?
2373. So, yeah, that'll be pleasant.
Apparently, gusting 25 miles an hour.
Not so
from
pleasant.
The southwest. Again, in the morning for the early starters, a little bit warmer, 11 degrees Celsius. Now, I can remember Beth Page Black absolutely... vividly, I can remember when that tournament started, they were taking a lot of the players out to number 10. Tiger Woods started there, and it was, I can remember, it was cold. The golf course was just covered in that dew you get when it's, yeah, right. And that golf course played as long as you wanted. And the amount of bogeys was just intense. I can just see this being exactly the same across Thursday and Friday. Long as you like, and it's just about minimising mistakes, and it's that major championship ability to aim 30 yards away from the pin, take the two putts, get out of town on a lot of these holes early morning. Saturday. Let's forget about the early starters. By the middle of the afternoon, the warmest temperature, apparently, 11 degrees Celsius. What's that in Fahrenheit?
52. So yeah, it isn't pleasant, is it?
Very. And Sunday, European. 12 degrees Celsius.
Yeah.
This golf course, boys, is going to play long as you like.
Mm. Yeah, if you're getting no help from the air temperature in terms of length either, then I think backs up the assertions that have already been made on the pod so far, which is going to be aid the longer hitters in the field and give them an advantage. Simple as that.
As we always say, forecasts are forecasts. They're a week away. We're recording this Friday noon in the UK. So this could have completely changed when you were listening to this podcast, but that's what we're seeing right now. I've got some data here. Let's move away from the course, I suppose. We have pulls together, and Paul, you do a fantastic job blowing smoke up your posterior. You do a fantastic job with the data. And one of the data things that I absolutely love that you do for the majors is our look at average score of players in majors going back to 2017 Masters. Mm-hmm. I'll take you through the top 10, shall I? Koepka is at 1, 70.12. Scottie Scheffler, 2, 70.35. Colin Morikawa at 3, 70.56. Rory at 4, 70.57. And then Xander at 5, 70.62. So, yes, you're correct. Between Koepka in first and Xander in fifth, there is a half shot per round difference in their major championship performances going back to 2017. That's crazy.
This is John for players who've... So this is for players who've made, was it 3-plus appearances, I think?
You got it.
Yep.
Doesn't include Luke List or...
Yeah, it just takes out the outliers that pop up in the data as a result.
Henny Duplessis or... John Rahm's at 6, DJ at 7, Spieth at 8. We don't know if he's going to play, wrist. And then 2 tied for 9th. Tony, Finau and Hideki Matsuyama. For those of you wondering, JT is at 11, Victor is at 12, Justin Rose sneaks in 13, Patrick Reed, 14, Tommy Fleetwood, 15. Only 14 of those players are within, on average, a shot per round at a major within Brooks Koepka. Patrick Cantlay for listeners, because I know lots of people fancy Patrick Cantlay this week. Quite rightly, looking at the course, looking at the geography, looking at where he's performed well. He sits T19 in that analysis. 71.39. It'd be interesting to slice that data. I mean, we could start to slice that potentially to more recent majors, say from 2020 or whatever, just see what how the numbers change. But the narrative there is that Brooks Koepka is an absolute major championship metronomic player. And that includes so many majors where he's basically playing on one leg with a knee injury.
Yep.
Outstanding. Scotty Scheffler's numbers are outstanding as well, aren't they? Clear second spot. I'm throwing this out there for background more than anything. I found those interesting statistics.
Yeah, I think it's always interesting to look because some players, and Brooks is a great example of a player who has historically raised his game for the majors, and yeah, he's going to be super popular next week, and quite rightly so. He's playing some good stuff over on LIV. Played for 3 rounds particularly well at Augusta, father to be now. The positives that can potentially come from that, there's a lot to like, and his price has understandably taken a cut from where he was at the Masters, but that's not to say that he should be disregarded, because I really don't think he should. A lot of game for it this week, next week.
I agree. Do you want Winged Foot 2020 leaderboard? We mention that because we're saying comparisons to Winged Foot. I suppose let's take you through that leaderboard. DeChambeau, Matthew Wolff, Louis Oosthuizen, Harris English, Xander was top 5. DJ, Will Zalatoris, tied 6. Then T8, Finau, JT, Webb Simpson, Zach Johnson, Rory McIlroy. I'll also take you through that 2019 leaderboard, which was at Bethpage Black. Koepka 1, Dustin Johnson 2. I'll never forget that closing round on Sunday with the crowd chanting, DJ, DJ, and getting behind him. And Brooks almost cracking. T3, Cantlay, Spieth and Matt Wallace. Luke List at 6. Sung Kang, of all people, at 7. Tie for 8th, there were plenty of them. Kuchar, Lowry, McIlroy, Scott, Eric Van Ruin, Gary Woodland. I think two meaningful leaderboards there. I really do.
Potentially. Yeah.
Potentially, yes. Northern Eastern US recent winners. We don't tend to visit these parts that often, so I thought I'd just make a list of top five finishers at tournaments that have been up in the Northeast United States. So, you know, similar agronomy. A couple of them, Delaware, you could argue, is not technically in the Northern Eastern United States when you look at Wikipedia, but it's literally like not 10 yards over the border. So let's start the 2022 BMW Championship. Wilmington Country Club. Patrick Cantlay won that. Stallings, Scheffler, and Zander were in the high spots there in terms of place. 2020 Travelers, Cromwell, Connecticut, Highlands, River Highlands. Zander won that one last year. JT Poston and Sahith Degala were in the places. 2022 US Open, the Country Club, Brookline, Massachusetts. Matt Fitzpatrick naturally won that one. Scheffler again. Zalatoris doesn't play. Matsuyama was in the top five that week. I'm including the 2022 RBC Canadian Open. They played that, of course, in St. George's, Toronto. Yeah, that's in Canada, Steve. Yes, but it's literally over the other side of Lake Ontario. So let's include that one as well. In that one, Rory McIlroy, Tony Finau, Justin Thomas, Sam Burns, Justin Rose. We then go to 2021, the Northern Trust, Liberty National. Tony Finau won that. That was a huge breakout victory for Finau. He beat Cam Smith, John Rahm, Tom Hoagie, Alex Noren, Justin Thomas. 2021 Travelers Championship, Cromwell, Connecticut. That was won by Harris English. Kramer Hickok, Abraham Anser. I'll go one last one. 2020 Northern Trust. They played that at TPC Boston, Massachusetts. That was the one that where Dustin Johnson run just literally ran and hide. I think he shot like something like 30 under. Harris English again. Kevin Kisner, Scotty Scheffler, John Rahm in the places. Just press the rewind button if you're making a note of those, so you can put it down. There's quite a few names there that repeat themselves a few times.
Yeah.
There's all players listed on your play well in this kind of graphical location.
Yeah. There's all listed on your pre-event preview as well, aren't they? The research preview article. So can have a dig through that.
Talk to me, Barry. Talk to me. What's going around in your brain right now? What are you having for lunch, or what are you having for lunch? By the way,
I'm on Hideki this week.
You are
the bank grass greens again. I think I might just roll it over and get into them next week as well. I'm searching for a bit of value. We've had a lot of shorty price winners this season for the vast majority anyway, at least in 2023. So could be complete fool's errand trying to find something with a bit of value there. But the chase is kind of fun to try find that.
9-1 Rahm, the Masters. Let's go back. Cam Smith 25-1, the Open Championship. Mats Fitzpatrick 25-1, the US Open. Justin Thomas 16-1, the PGA Championship last year. Scotty Scheffler 16-1, the Masters. Last five major prices.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of in keeping with the what we've seen largely, both sides of the Atlantic in terms of winning prices this calendar year so far. There's been a lot in that kind of 25 28-1 and shorter bracket.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, and that kind of, you know, kind of makes sense when you consider that. And again, this is part of your preview. Talked about how most of the winners of the PGA Championship are coming off pretty warm or pretty hot form, particularly on their last start. So, you know, kind of top 30 or better finish on the last start is a pretty good place to start your analysis. I mean, I think the only one in relatively recent times who's kind of fallen outside of that was Phil Mickelson, and he'd even flashed a little bit of form, hadn't he, on his previous start. I think he was first round leader
at quite drifted,
yeah, and then drifted away a bit.
Why? But out
then, if you're picking, yeah. If you're picking,
he's 50.
Yeah, if you're looking for players who have that pretty immediate form, then generally they're going to be a relatively short price. But you know, it's about finding the winner. So if that's the case, and you pick up a 25 or 22-1 winner, Xander. For me, Xander pops up in an awful lot of the analysis I've done so far. I've got to say, you talked about Eastlake. He's won there. He's 72 hole leader. It's there's more Donald Ross form as well. Aaron Mink 2018, he finished third. New York hosted majors since 2018, 6th, 16th, 5th for Xander. So he's been there or thereabouts. And we know he lifts his game for these major championships. He's playing some great stuff. I think I said to you, Barry, at the Masters, just eyeballing his swing, he seems to be swinging the club fantastically at the moment.
Mm.
Really strong. These anti-post markets aren't for me, particularly the way they are at the moment, but I'll be interested to see what kind of price and each way terms combination I can get on Xander next week, because he may well be in my thought processes for that. Well, he's certainly in my thought processes, but maybe in my team.
He's 28 on the exchange.
Mm.
That kind of, that has to be appealing for Mr. 22 when you can get him more than that. If you're keen on backing him,
yeah. I'd love to see 28s and extended places. That
Looking at odds checker here, there's, you've got the top three, or you've got Rahm and Scheffler there, and then Rory just a little bit behind. Then you've 12 guys in this 20-30 bracket, which kind of, I don't know, says to me that the bookies haven't really got a grasp on who might actually, who's preferential to somebody else.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's wide open in that respect. Can I throw a trend at you, Steve?
And one, oh, please do. We love a trend.
Well, one that I've picked up in the past, and I'm sure I've mentioned it at PGA Championships. But where there was a Masters tournament played in the year before the US PGA Championship, so this excludes the COVID year, every winner, all the way back to Keegan Bradley, who breaks the trend, from Keegan Bradley onwards, every winner had at least made the cut at the Masters. So it had played it and had at least made the cut. So reading backwards, Justin Thomas had finished 8th, Mickelson 21st, Koepka 2nd and 39th, JT again 22nd, Jimmy Walker 29th, Jason Day 28th, McIlroy 8th, Duffner 20th, McIlroy 40th. Every winner had at least made the cut of the Masters. Now, trends are there to be broken, but there's some logic there. You know, someone who's come in has had a good look, or a look of some description, at a major championship field in that season so far, a few weeks before generally, then goes on to win. And if you apply that to this week's field, and Barry was talking about how do you cut the field down, if you apply that to this week's field, then you're,
well, I can tell you two.
Yeah you lose some big names. Yeah,
JT.
Yep.
Any others?
Bryson. You were talking about winged foot. I mean, Bryson missed the cut. Yeah, yeah. Corey Connors is another one, potentially. You'd lop off there. Sadly, Ricky Fowler drops off because he didn't play the Masters either. So this,
he didn't miss the cut. Don't do that. Don't cherry pick your stats. He didn't miss the cut.
But this is, I mean, they all played the Masters as well, and this is the point. It's having that kind of a feeling of playing major championship golf in the relatively recent past, and then actually, you know, getting four good rounds in there, or four rounds in there at least. So yeah, if you want to cut the field down to 50, just pick the players that are in the field this week and made the cut at the Masters, and use that as your first cut shortlist.
I love these trends. Absolutely love them. You just think, though, that trend, again, would have been absolutely rinsed and hosed if Mito Pereira hadn't ballsed up the 72nd hole last year at Southern Hills. Because he clearly hadn't played the Masters.
Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, it does. I mean, of the shorties at the top of the market, the two that I've got a red line through already were Rory and were JT. That's before you mentioned that.
Yeah. Well, if it helps to, you know, and these things change, don't they? And there's a lot to like with Rory, even though the game seems to be a little bit off, and, you know, there's this narrative about him being an Oak Hill member. His missus is, she lives in Rochester, doesn't she? Or she comes from Rochester.
Yeah.
In terms of the course fit with the way that the renovations have favoured a certain style of golf, you know, Rory would seem to fit that nicely. You know, relatively soft golf course. You could put it all together, but there's a niggling doubt about his underlying game at the moment. And yeah, if you believe these trends, or you stick with these trends solidly, then he missed the cut at the Masters. You lop him off the list. You just mentioned Mito as well. I did a quick look into Mito's stats, and he's been absolutely pounding greens in regulation. I know we don't get a great deal of stats out of the LIV guys, but just reading through his last eight starts, 8th, 1st, 4th, 2nd, 1st, 8th, 20th, 3rd for greens in regulation. So never outside the top 20, 7 of those starts inside the top 10. Mm. He was 8th for greens in regulation at the Masters.
His strokes gained ball striking numbers right now, if you ever had that statistic, would be in the, got to be in the top 2 or 3 in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
He's absolutely prolific. I'll tell you, the other guy whose numbers just jump when you look at them is Koepka's.
Yes.
And you know, we all have our views on LIV, but if you just look at the raw numbers of what Koepka has produced this year, you just see 2023. 100% motivated, 100% driven to actually achieve something at major championship level again.
And fit as well. Fit. I think Barry mentioned it. It's, you know, he's been approaching a lot of these major championships over the last few years, not in, you know, full health. There have been niggling issues that have been holding him back, and he appears to be, you know, 100%. And that makes him a very dangerous animal in this, in any major championship, particularly the PGA Championship, and particularly one that would appear to suit his game.
I've got some numbers here. We have a brand new predictor model, Optimizer, at Golf Betting System. You can use it free of charge. Within that, we have a par 70 number, which basically goes back 5 years. Classifies those players in this week's field who have done best on par 70 setups. I'll take you through the top numbers, shall I? Brooks Koepka is number one. Rory McIlroy, 2. Tie for 3, and they're quite a significant chunk behind Koepka and McIlroy. Dustin Johnson and Xander. 5th, Justin Thomas. 6th, Tony Finau, tied with Hideki. 7th, Colin Morikawa. 8th, Kevin Na, tied with Webb Simpson. Is Na in the field? I don't know, but Simpson is. Justin Rose, Matthew Fitzpatrick, tied with John Rahm and Scottie Scheffler. Maybe Hideki's the way ahead, Barry.
Hideki's
the way ahead.
Yeah,
he does appear in a lot of these fields, leaderboards, numbers.
Get into my slipstream, boys. I've backed him on the machine. 60.
How much?
60 on the 60s on the exchange.
Jesus.
I've done it. And of course, you all know I've also backed Ricky on the exchange. 120, just couldn't resist it. He's got the motivation from missing the Masters. Like this, I probably back Ricky more than any Irish person. So that's my anti-bias.
Yeah, he's compensating for it there, Barry.
He's playing phenomenal golf. He's playing such great golf at the moment. So what a way to return to winning, to actually to do it at a major. Just it would just lock all conversations about him away forever.
Can you just recap, Barry? Have you got the exchange up there?
I do.
What players are directly below Matsuyama in terms of shorter on the machine?
Okay, we've Cam Smith, 55s, DJ Gooch are both 55s. Jason Day is 50s. Sam Burns, 46. Max is 44. Morikawa, 38, as is Sung J.M. Fitzpatrick, 36.
Yeah, that's enough.
Speed, yeah, there we go. So,
you've got a horribly out-of-form DJ that doesn't seem to practice at all these days, just out on his boat in Florida. And there were a couple of names there. They've got no major history whatsoever of them in terms of results. And you've got a Masters winner there at 60s. A lot to be said for it. Who also top fived at the US Open the last time they played there in Massachusetts last year.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's just always his fitness that concerns me. I'm sure there were whispers of a possible injury again yesterday. So something to keep an eye on.
Well, as he shot 7 under.
Yeah, but these things, if there's just a niggle there.
Especially with these cold weather conditions.
Yeah. Does it affect him? Is it just a red herring? I don't know. I'm overly wary with Matsuyama. That's perhaps wrong. Perhaps players can put up with these little ailments and still perform.
Well, it's funny, wasn't it? Tiger with his injuries and his surgery and whatever, if there was one location and time of year that wasn't going to suit Tiger Woods, it's May in Rochester, New York at the PGA Championship. Mm. And that is an angle with some of this. I mean, does Patrick Cantlay go well in cold weather conditions when the guy's always rumoured to have serious back problems? There's all these kind of things that you've got to try and build into the mix.
Yep.
Don't know. And then he finished third at Bethpage, didn't he? That one in 2019. So, yeah, there's lots to think about over the coming days, I think. That's the thing with this research podcast. It throws up more questions than answers. They always do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But if it gets the thought processes going, moving in the right direction, Steve, then it's served a purpose. And hopefully it's served a purpose for the punters and listeners as well.
Exactly. Both for us three and for the listeners. And that's the key.
Mm.
One thing about the course that's just kind of gnawing away at my head in the background. So on the subject of the bunkers, let's say particularly the greenside ones, they're with the elevated greens, there's a serious amount of depth to them.
Absolutely.
And so part of that is me wondering what kind of sand they have in there. If it's sand that makes it difficult to get a lot of spin on the ball, it's going to be difficult to get the ball very close to the pins, and you're going to end up with a lot of these 6 to 10 foot range putts. So I just wonder, there's definitely a scrambling angle there, but I wonder whether the elite bunker players' advantage will be as pronounced this week when if the sand is a difficult type of sand to get yourself close to the pin on. I don't know if that's far too nuanced, but it just popped in my head and I just kind of spoke it before.
We need to be sending a DM to Andy Lack, who's played this course on a few times. Just going back to the course, actually, before we shut this down, this is all based upon my analysis on the internet and experience of looking at the course and whatever. I was comparing approach distances at Oak Hill to what we saw at Southern Hills last year and trying to get a view of what key approach distances we're looking at. And I revisited this morning, looking at the cold weather conditions and trying to assess that, you know, we're not going to be hitting the ball 340 yards carry here because it's going to be 8 degrees Celsius into a headwind on some of these holes. So I've tried to do it as realistically as I can. The one thing I did note that's different to Southern Hills, even though Southern Hills was a longer golf course, 7,500 yards plus, that it makes sense that there were more longer 200 yard plus approaches last year. I count 5 holes last year at Southern Hills where approaches were 200 plus. This year I'm counting 3. So that makes a level of sense, yes. There are also 7 approaches last year at Southern Hills that were, I classified between 100 and 125 yards, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So 7 plus 5, 12 of the 18 were either sub 125 or over 200. Well, this year it looks like there's 6 holes that are sub 125. So all of a sudden that 12... those 12 holes at Southern Hills that were either sub 125 or more than 200 become this year 9 holes, which means we're looking at more mid to long irons. And actually last year there were 4 holes with approaches between 150 and 200. This year there's 7. So I'm just going to look at the nuances of that. And that's going to feature with different kinds of players. You know, players that I'm seeing that are exceptionally strong from 175 to 200 and 200 plus potentially have an advantage here. And if you can get the odd elite player that's a fantastic sub 125 as well and can bomb it and is good from the sand, we could be onto a winner.
That's your man.
And it's going to be Scotty Scheffler and John Rahm. And that'll be that.
That sounds like there's some in-depth research still to be done then, Stephen.
Yeah. But that those nuances interest me. Mm. They interest me because actually when we look, when I recap to last year at Southern Hills and there was that differential between sub 125 and over 200, Justin Thomas was in the top 10 for proximity 100 to 125, and he was in the top 30 for proximity 200 plus. And Mito Pereira was in the top 50 for both, and Zalatoris, who finished second, was fourth for approaches above 200, and in the top 60 for approaches from within 125 with a wedge. So there's kind of some method to the madness. All 3 of those that challenged for the victory had the prerequisite numbers in those 2 approach buckets. And clearly, take Pereira out, the other 2 add that long driving distance, all drives as well, Zalatoris and Thomas, that you seem to need for a PGA Championship winner on a classical PGA Championship setup.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to this afternoon, actually, starting to dig into some of this detail.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where your analysis takes you for next week.
When it throws up John Rahm and Scotty Scheffler on everything. And nobody else. Fantastic. I think that's us done then, chaps, is it?
Yep, more work to do then. And back on Tuesday for our final picks pod.
Back on Tuesday, absolutely. We've just done over an hour, so that's about right. Don't forget, listeners, please don't forget, if you could spare those 3 minutes to fill in that online questionnaire and the Smart Betting Club survey. There's questions on there like best bookmaker and worst bookmaker. It's quite interesting, isn't it? I spent some time yesterday afternoon doing it. I know you did, Paul. So if you could vote for us in those awards, we would greatly appreciate it. Right, I'll see you chaps next Tuesday for our PGA Championship Tips podcast. Happy research.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system, the golf betting system, it's the golf.